Nahum Segal Network, time to speak about another amazing book. I want to thank our friends at Curran Publications who bring you this segment each and every week. It's called By the Book. Check out Curran and Magid Books at currenpub.com, K-O-R-E-N-pub.com. This time of year especially, they have so many amazing works that you'll enjoy. In today's case, the book, The Secret of Chabad, is on the Toby Press label, the Toby Press imprint, and that means you can go to tobypress.com, T-O-B-Y-Press.com, and get more information about this and the other books on the Toby Press label. Rabbi David Eliezeri is with us via telephone. He is author of the brand new book, The Secret of Chabad, Inside the World's Most Successful Jewish Movement, considered one of the most influential movements in modern Judaism. Writers have speculated for decades about the unparalleled success of Chabad Lubavitch. In this book, Rabbi Eliezeri depicts the events, ideas, and personalities that have made Chabad Lubavitch a worldwide phenomenon. He's a veteran Chabad shliach in Yorba Linda, California, and was previously the Jewish chaplain at the University of Miami. He's president of the Rabbinical Council of Orange County in Long Beach, sits on the board of the Jewish Federation of Family Services of Orange County, and active in local and national Jewish affairs. He's a noted writer and lecturer. Rabbi David Eliezeri, welcome to the Nahum Segal Network.
What a pleasure. I've been listening for years, and this is my first time to come and join the network. It's great.
I greatly appreciate that. You know, it's funny. You talk about the secret of Chabad in the press release, as I just said. It speaks about how you speak about the events, ideas, and personalities that have made Chabad Lubavitch a worldwide phenomenon. Should it be personalities? Am I right or wrong that it was really only one personality that brought Chabad to where it got to?
It was one personality who, I would argue, really refocused world Jewry, but which is the Rebbe. But beyond that, there are the personalities that the Rebbe encouraged, because one of the most intriguing things about his style of leadership is he built Jewish leaders.
Right.
He built people to be independent thinkers. And if you walk into a Chabad house in Kathmandu or one in Kentucky, you're going to find the philosophy and ideology is the same, but the spices and the cholent are a little different. Each one is a reflection of the individuality of that local Chabad rabbi in Rebbetzin.
It's interesting because we talk about not just raising or nurturing independent thinkers, as you just said, but really nurturing independent doers as well, molding people so that they have the confidence to go ahead and do things and accomplish things and maybe get into an area that's not always their comfort zone, teaching them through his network how to build a Chabad house and how to fund the Chabad house. I mean, all these things, it seems, were coming out of 770 to every shliach who went around the world.
Right, but here there's something much deeper. There's a story in the book, The Secret of Chabad, about a young rabbi who's not anymore so young. He's a senior member of the rabbinical court of Chabad in Israel. The Rebbe in the mid-70s sent about 50 young men and women to Israel, so to speak, to kickstart Chabad in Israel.
Right.
Here in America, things were moving, but the Chassidim who grew up in Crown Heights, surrounded in that milieu of being next to the Rebbe every day, they really had gotten the, so to speak, the push. But the Israelis were lagging a bit, so the Rebbe sent 50 young Americans, about 20 couples and a bunch of singles, and one of them was a rabbi called Mendel Wachowski, and he got married in Israel, and he started working with one of the senior Chassidim in Israel whose job was to oversee all Chabad institutions, and he does a tour of the institutions. He comes to New York, and he writes the Rebbe an 8-page report. You know, and the school in this town is doing great. The shul in this city has problems. The Chabad house in this location needs rectification, good, bad, and whatever. And like a overview of everything. He's waiting for an answer. Finally, just before he goes to the airport, the Rebbe has an answer for you. He runs over to the 770, the iconic location, and he gets the answer from the Rebbe. And the Rebbe writes on the side of the long 8-9-page report, all of the issues which you've written about need to be rectified, and the question is, what are you going to do about it? He said that was a moment. He was first befuddled. He's sitting on the plane for 10 hours afterwards going to Israel, and he finally gets it. I wasn't sent here to be a spectator. I was sent here to be a leader. I was sent here to be empowered. And what the Rebbe did was empower individuals with that inner sense that they can transform Jewish life. So this young rabbi, he emerges as a great leader in Israel because the Rebbe is saying, what are you going to do about it?
So often they would seek his advice, but return with what?
They would return with their own creativity. because what the Rebbe didn't want was a bunch of robots. He wanted a bunch of people to realize their own potential, and one of his geniuses was to find that creative potential in each person and direct them in that way. You know, there was one of the senior shluchim here in America, Rabbi Moshe Feller. He was the fourth one the Rebbe sent out in the early 60s. And the Rebbe, in a meeting he had with him before he left to Minneapolis, he was really from Minneapolis, the Rebbe was sending him back to his hometown, which was in itself an interesting challenge. You know, it says, Ein Navi Be'iro, you can't be a prophet in your own city. Right. He's coming back to his own hometown, which has almost no religious people except his father. And the Rebbe tells him, he asks him in this meeting, he says, do you have a copy of the Shulchan Aruch? Do you have a copy of Sharim Mitzvim Halacha? The Rebbe lists a list of books of Halacha. And then the Rebbe says to him in Yiddish, du soll sein, and he adds the English word flexible. What's the message? Keep the rules, but push the creative envelope. Don't compromise Halacha, God forbid, but be innovative, be creative, look for new ideas how to do things. Think out of the box. And what the Rebbe wanted us to do was to balance, so to speak, these two opposite things. Number one, never to lose our fidelity to Jewish tradition. And number two, to be creative in what we do and how we do it.
So the book is called The Secret of Chabad. Rabbi David Eliezeri is with us, Toby Press release. So when people tell stories then that seem unbelievable, the Rebbe, you know, encouraged us to do this, when we know that this may not play in certain other communities on this globe. Those stories are believable. He felt to be flexible within halacha, obviously, but to be flexible.
Never to cross the line of halacha. That was an absolute principle the Rebbe said to us never to do.
But to be flexible enough that you are either accommodating people or making them feel better or making them feel more included if necessary.
Well, it's also a question of being non-judgmental. You know, at the very core of the Rebbe's philosophy was to look for the inner good at everybody. And I'll tell you something that really struck me. One day, Miss Israel comes to the Rebbe on a Sunday morning when he was giving out dollars.
I've seen this video. Go ahead. It's amazing.
It's amazing. So you think to yourself, here's a woman.
Right.
A young woman in her 20s, she's Miss Israel. It's all about vanity and beauty and outwardness and how she looks. And there's going to be this encounter between this Hasidic Rebbe and Miss Israel. What is going to be the common ground? So she tells the Rebbe, I want a blessing for having children and family. I'm Miss Israel. And the Rebbe turns to her and tells her the true beauty of a Jewish woman is the inner spiritual beauty. But then he goes a step further, and this is so much his style. He says, you need to tell everybody else involved in your pageant that what beauty is really about. It's the inner spiritual beauty in every human being. Think about this. Not only did he tell her a lesson in life, he empowered her to make change in her environment and her world.
Yeah, how many rabbinic leaders would have encouraged her to leave that world? Instead, he's telling her how to deal with that world and what
to
say.
Not only that, how to transform that world into something that's different.
Unbelievable. Is it possible then, and this is going to sound like a silly question, but without the Rebbe, whatever you describe, these secrets of Chabad, it obviously could never have happened, right? I mean, without his leadership, all the things that you describe in the book could never have happened.
That's for sure.
Right.
And not only that, I would argue something else, that if you look at the span of Jewish history for the last 2,000 years, when I would say that the Rebbe is a figure who transcends, you know, the centuries. It's like my local Reform rabbi walked in one day to a meeting with me. He had read the book by Joseph Telushkin, my dear friend, who wrote a stunning book,
yeah,
the Rebbe.
Amazing
and
book.
He says to me, the Rebbe is a once-in-a-millennium figure.
Right.
But who in Jewish history has established so many institutions of Torah? I don't think there's any other personality. And who has also so refocused the direction of Jewish life, not just on a local scale. You have many great people. Take Rabbi Avadi Yosef. He revolutionized Sephardic Jewish life in Israel.
Right.
It's a phenomenal achievement what he did. But the Rebbe did something on a global scale. Jonathan, Chief Rabbi of England, Jonathan Sacks, says an amazing thing. He says the Nazis chased down every Jew with hatred. He chased down every Jew with love.
Yeah, a true Manig Yisrael. And by the way, what you just described makes it easier for people to understand that we're not leaderless in Chabad, even though he hasn't been around in all these years. That because of what he set up and his influence and these independent people that he created, as you described, this movement can continue and flourish.
Well, see, the great question after Rebbe passed away was, and we wondered about it internally, what's going to be our future?
Right.
Are we going to hold together?
Right.
You know, a friend of mine told me that one of his buddies from South America said to him, listen, after the day of the Rebbe's funeral, I'll see you in 20 years. I have no reason to come back to New York.
Right.
Now, we see 20-some-odd years later, Chabad is number-wise, four times the size it was the day the Rebbe passed away. Institutionally, many of those Chabad houses were little storefront operations, are major Jewish community centers. And when we say today that we're the largest Jewish organization in the world, we are the largest Jewish organization in the world.
Yeah.
However you want to slice it or dice it, how you want to measure it, by people involved, by budget, by amounts of rabbis, however you're going to say it, there's nobody who eclipses us right now other than Chabad. So what the Rebbe did was empowered people to intuitively make their agenda, their agenda. And this was probably the most amazing level of his leadership, that people, his chassidim, would internalize his values and make them part of their own values.
Rabbi David Eliezeri is with us, veteran Chabad Shliach in Yorba Linda, California. You know, there are a lot of books already. A lot may be the wrong word. There are a collection of books already about the Rebbe. Did you hesitate to write it because of that?
No, because I think each one is different. I think there's been some magnificent books in the last year. I think that Rabbi Adin Steinzel's book, My Rebbe, is a very touching personal insight into the Rebbe's life.
Incredible.
And I think Joseph Telushkin's book,
also
Rebbe, is a very insightful into the Rebbe's teachings.
Yep.
But there's another question which is different. How did the Rebbe change modern Jewish life? And what was this worldview that did so? And I tackled this question from the point of view as a shliach, because as they say in Yiddish, ich hab das durchgelebt, I live this.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, I've been in this business for over four, I'm not in this business, it's a mission, for over four decades. So I've seen how Chabad in America in the early 70s, when I went out on college campuses, was not accepted. And today, the whole Jewish world is in awe of us. So I've seen this transformation. And I think that many people want to understand what the Rebbe did. So I think while the other books taught what the Rebbe's taught, this one is explaining what the Rebbe did, and I think this is a very important book. And I think because so many people today, hundreds of thousands of Jews, are involved with Chabad on so many kinds of levels, they want to understand it. I had an amazing story that happened to me. Last 3 years, I went to speak to the graduating class of the Conservative Rabbinical Seminary in California.
You're serious?
Basically, they wanted to know who's going to be the Chabad rabbi down the block.
Huh.
So very interesting thing happened. Last year when I went there, I said, I want to ask you guys a question. Guys, it's guys and girls, you know, becoming rabbis.
Right.
I also was very honest with them. I told them up front, I don't believe in pluralism, so let's be straight about our relationship here. But nevertheless, I asked these guys and girls, I said, there was 18 students graduating from the rabbinical school here in California at the University of Judaism. I said, how many have been involved with Chabad? Of the 18, 17 had had a long, intimate relationship with the Chabad Shliach. Now, these rabbis today are much different than the conservative rabbis of a generation ago that were theologically driven. These are basically searchers for Judaism, and they ended up at the liberal end of the Jewish world.
Right.
But somewhere along this searching process was this engagement with Chabad. One of them was writing his thesis on the Rebbe's talks. So I found a sense of respect among these rabbinical students, who you might think to them we'd be competition, that didn't exist 20 years ago, 30 years ago, for sure not 40 years
so
ago.
So your point is that today they are affiliated with other movements, so to speak, but it's unlike 40 years ago. It's not exclusive to that movement, or they're not wholeheartedly in that movement. What's the point?
I think that two things. Number one is that as a comment about their movements, that they're searching for Judaism.
Right.
But beyond that, these people who are going to become liberal Jewish leaders, they were all touched by the Rebbe's emissaries.
Right. Right.
Now, they may have not gone as far as we would have wanted them to go, and we may have some theological disagreements with them, but somewhere in their lives, in their Jewish journey, they were enriched and uplifted by a shliach. And that shows the reach of Chabad today.
Yeah, 100%. Rabbi David Eliezeri is with us. We are talking about the brand new book, The Secret of Chabad, Inside the World's Most Successful Jewish Movement. You pointed out to me before this conversation that this book, amazingly, and again, I don't want to express so much shock because it's not fair to you as the author, but it is doing pretty well out there already, no?
Yeah, we're number one on Amazon in new books in Jewish history, and this has been with very little publicity. There's only been one review in the Jerusalem Post. The buzz on this book is really big because people want to understand today the phenomenon which either they're going to the Chabad or their kids is going to Chabad on campus, or their best friend is going to Chabad's adult education, like the Jewish Learning Institute programs. Everybody's trying to figure out who are these guys down the block with the black hats and the beards?
Yeah.
And who are their equally more impressive Rebbetzins who take a big role in leadership in Chabad centers?
All right, it's no secret that I pride myself being a member of the quote-unquote modern Orthodox community, YU community, call it whatever you wish. Yet you told me in advance of this conversation that the Rebbe, as modern as he got, and believe you me, nobody understood modern technology and the direction that this world was taking more than he did. Nonetheless, he had a different attitude toward all of this and modernity than some of us might have. How would you describe that?
Well, I think there's something which has been poorly understood, and I struggled with this issue for a while. Because I was wondering for a while, why do we have, from certain parts of the more yeshivish community, a certain degree of hostility to
right.
Chabad? Some of it is based on a different view about Hasidic philosophy and
right.
learning Musar and these kinds of issues.
Right.
But I think there's a deeper issue, and I think it's about how to tackle the issue of modernity. Because the great challenge to Jews in living in a democratic, open society like the United States is how do we deal with the society that surrounds us?
Right.
So much of the Haredi community or the Yeshiva community has adapted a strategy, and we must have a great sense of admiration for the success, but one of insularity. They
right.
wanted to go and they wanted to build a castle and put a moat around it, and occasionally we make a foray out of the castle to deal with the world around us. But we want to live in a Lakewood, we want to live in a Muncie, we want to live in our own kind of world and have little to do with the outside secular society.
Right.
The more modern Orthodox world advocated a greater integration in that society, and that's also an issue that modern Orthodoxy is struggling to. Yeshiva University is represents that. And if we go beyond that, outside of the Orthodox world, I think we can see that the liberal values have overtaken Jewish values. But I think what the Rebbe's approach was, and Chabad's approach, which is different, was one of principled engagement. In other words, the world outside, Hasidic philosophy in particular, sees goodness and sanctity and holiness and everything. So the world outside is not evil. The world outside is good. And American society in particular is a Medina Shel Chesed. It's a country of kindness that everybody used to describe it as. So we have to deal with the society around us, but we have to deal with it through principled engagement and realize that our values have to be preeminent. Now, this is a much tougher road to hoe because it's easy to push the world at bay and have nothing to do with the society around you. It's tougher to keep your own values and deal with that society. And I think that this approach of Chabad is uniquely different than other segments of the Orthodox world when it comes to the issue of modernity.
Hmm. I would like to think there's more principled engagement in other segments of Orthodox world than you think, but I could be wrong, but I guess...
No, I think there is principled engagement, but I'll give you another classic example. It's how to deal with the modern state of Israel. Because what happened there? I mean, we all know that Zionism started off in many ways as a reaction against traditional Judaism, and they were trying to replace classical Jewish identity with secular nationalism.
Well,
the Haredi world was very wary of it because of these reasons.
Right.
And we also know in the early Zionist history there was tremendous hostility toward traditional Judaism, which
right.
I think has waned to a large degree.
Correct.
But when we look at the issue of the draft in Israel, we find three different reactions. We find the modern Orthodox religious Zionist world, and they are to be greatly admired. They've developed a system of yeshivat hesder, and et cetera, which have been wonderful, I think, balancing act. The Haredi world, when they had the issue of the draft 2 years ago, said, we don't even want to talk to you guys. And Chabad says, we want to make an arrangement with you. Our young men are going to go to yeshiva, they'll get deferments, and then afterwards they're going to go into the military.
Right.
So it's, again, the same process of principled engagement. And, I mean, I had a classmate who sat with me in yeshiva in Israel on my bench, and he sat, tragically lost his life in the Yom Kippur War.
Right.
He was in a tank battle in Syria. So we were always taught to put the army on a pedestal to be admired, but we also were taught that we should study Torah full time. So it's a balancing act, and that same balancing act of dealing with modernity here in America is also dealing with Israeli society. We're not rejecting the goodness and the bounty that we can see in the society that surrounds us.
All right. Anytime I do the topic of the Rebbe, I could do it for 2-3 hours. We only have a few minutes left. There are a couple of points I need to get to. You have a chapter on the Menorah Wars. I have not read it yet. It's aptly named, in my opinion, because it does seem that in certain communities it does become a war, unfortunately. What should the attitude be? At what point should we disengage from the war when it's bringing out so much hostility from other communities?
Well, I think the war is finished. And I don't think the war was about the menorahs. The war was not about church and state. It was about something, two more fundamental issues. It was about the role of Jewish identity in American society and the role of Chabad in American society. the role of Jewish identity in American society, the argument, and you read this in Charles Silverman's book, Certain People, about the attitude of Judaism, especially in the 50s and 60s and early 70s, it's changed since then, was Shah, let's not rock the boat. We should be quiet. We should not be too assertive with our Jewish identity. And what Chabad was doing was saying, you know what? We live in America where we have freedom of expression. We should express our identity. We have nothing to be afraid of. Really, the person who summed it up best to me was the man who was one of the leaders of the battle against Chabad, Professor Arthur Hertzberg, who lived in Elizabeth, New Jersey, who passed away, who in his later years of his life became very close with Chabad. But he was the president of the American Jewish Congress in the 70s when it was battling Chabad and Hanukkah menorahs. And he said to me, and the quote is in the book, we became friends in the last years of his life. He says, "We believed we should be a citizen on the street and a Jew in our homes. The Rebbe believed we should be Jew on the street and then we'd be Jew in the home." He says he was right and we were wrong. So the first thing about the menorah wars, it wasn't about church and state. That was for certain ideological people, it was. One day I saw Alan Dershowitz, I happen to know, and he gave me a blurb on the back of the book. I said, "Alan, I saw you lit the menorah in Harvard Square." He says, "Yes, David, but it's private property." He's a believer in Jewish assertion, but he, you know what I mean? He felt it's private property.
Yes,
but those are few and far between. But it was more embarrassed to be too Jewish.
But you see, to make the argument that you're making, you're assuming that it's only a Jewish battle, these wars, and that non-Jews never took offense.
Non-Jews didn't care. You know what the joke about Chabad rabbis are? If you went to a city council and it was all non-Jews, they proved it instantly to put up a menorah. It's only when you had a Jew in the city council you had troubles.
And you could prove that. It's not
100%. Anecdotally, I can prove it. Secondly, the second issue about the menorah wars was something else. Chabad began growing in the 70s. And we began to express a bit of independence. And here we go. We put up Hanukkah menorahs. And here come the Jewish leaders from the American Jewish Congress, by the way, the American Jewish Congress is basically an extinct organization now.
Correct.
The American Jewish Committee and the ADL and the liberal Jewish groups. And they say, "Who are you to put up menorahs?" As the old Yiddish saying, "Wer bist du? Who are you?" And we said, "Well, we have a different view. Well, we don't agree with you. You need to listen to us." "Well, we're not listening to you." So this was also a conflict about Chabad asserting its viewpoint in American Jewish community, which was different than the normal to view that many other Jewish groups have. And even the Orthodox groups were to a large degree focused on Orthodox Jewish survival, not on the totality of Jewish destiny, and not on they were concerned with building their internal systems of preserving Judaism, but not on the whole welfare of the Jewish world. Not saying they haven't done great outreach work. Mm-hmm. You look at NCSY, I'm in awe of the great things they've done. But most of these efforts were focused inward toward the more affiliated and Orthodox world.
You know what the problem... I'm sorry.
And so what Chabad was saying is we have a different viewpoint. We don't have to hide who we're Jewish in America, and we have a right to express a view which is different than the rest.
You know what's frustrating to me sometimes is what you just said. You just said that the NCSY, for instance, you have high regard and you admire the work they've done. Unfortunately, there's there are certain segments of the Jewish world that cannot come to grips with the incredible work Chabad has done. They just can't. Like, I think it's about jealousy, frankly. They just cannot admit to the incredible, all the acts that have been done around this world.
Right, but I think that's changing, and I'll tell you the reason why.
Even in the yeshivish world?
I think a fundamental changing. Number one, in particular, we see this in groups like Satmar, which is amazing because we have serious ideological difference with them over Israel and things like this. But these people travel. And when they need a mikveh, and the mikveh in Beijing was paid for with money from the Satmar Jewish community.
And I think it was Satmar group in Hong Kong, I think, it did the Hachlas Sefer Torah, if I'm not mistaken.
I got money from a Satmar group, a bunch of Satmar chassidim, to build my mikveh in Yorba Linda, California. I'm in awe of their chesed. So number one is, I think, as religious Jews travel, and they see the self-sacrifice of the shluchim, and they see what they're doing for the Jewish people, it's a game changer. I also think that the controversies that surrounded Chabad in the post-era after the Rebbe passed away, where many people worried about this over-infatuation with the issue of Mashiach, etc., which is weighing to a very large degree, except very isolated people, that those doubts are away. And beyond that, I think that the ideological harshness that existed because of certain leaders that existed in the yeshiva world that are not being expressed in the same degree. I think we're seeing a change. I think we're beginning to see a change. There is ideological differences.
Right.
Go to this issue of the army in Israel. There is segments of the yeshiva world that never want their young men to go to the army.
Right.
We're saying, go to yeshiva, go to Kollel for a year or two, and then go to the army. We not only support this. So we have a difference of opinion that part of the yeshiva world. So we're going to have an argument with them. But I think a lot of the tension is dropping, and there's an understanding of this phenomenal vision that the Rebbe had and how he changed Jewish destiny.
Rabbi David Eliezeri, Secret of Chabad, Inside the World's Most Successful Jewish Movement. We have about a minute left. It sounds like, at least from the last 25 minutes to me, it sounds like that the secret is principle. The secret is the way the Rebbe and then his constituents essentially maintained everything that he stood for and continued to demand that everybody stand for.
The secret is, number one, to have unbridled Avos Yisrael for everybody, no matter who the person is. That means the guy who's kvetching in the back of the shul about the rabbi, you got to love him as much as the guy sitting in the front row is your best friend. The secret is that we have to remain true to our values of Judaism. And the secret is to remember that ultimately what Judaism is about is a connection between us and Hashem, and we need to learn Torah and do mitzvahs and connect more Jews to their central purpose. What is it to be a Jew, to be an Eved Hashem, and to be a person who learns Torah?
How many years in your Belinda?
I'm 41 years a shliach, and I'm 30 years in Yorba Linda. And would you believe, just down the block from the birthplace and burial place of Richard Nixon Presidential Library, there's a beautiful, vibrant center full of many wonderful Jews and full of many wonderful mitzvahs.
And if I was there for a Shabbos, there'd be a minyan.
There would be close to 100 people, and the cholent and the l'chaim, you can't compare.
Right near San Clemente.
No, San Clemente's 30 minutes south of us. We're in the north part of Orange County. Yorba Linda's the northern part of Orange County, not far from Disneyland.
So I'm thinking of
you will have a gecholent that no shul in New York can compete with.
So I'm thinking of his home. You're saying his library.
I'm thinking, yeah, he was born here, and it's his library. So, and every Hanukkah, on Hanukkah, we have a Hanukkah celebration in the Richard Nixon Presidential Library.
You can't make this stuff up, huh?
No, it's the truth, baby. We really do it.
What an honor.
And also in the Reagan Library, we have another menorah lighting.
How far is that from you?
That's about an hour and a half north of me. That's in the valley. That's another Chabad center.
What an honor to speak with you. I wish you a tremendous hatzlacha with the book. It seems absolutely amazing. The Secret of Chabad, Inside the World's Most Successful Jewish Movement, TobyPress.com, everybody, or by David Eliezeri. I take this opportunity to wish you a happy, healthy, and sweet new year.
Everybody else also have a gesunta, a gebenchte year, and a year of peace and security for the Jewish people.
Amen. There you have it, everybody. Rabbi David Eliezeri. It's The Secret of Chabad, Inside the World's Most Successful Jewish Movement. I could speak with him for hours on this topic. You have an opportunity to explore all this by going to the web, tobypress.com, or basically anywhere else, it seems, and purchasing the brand new book, one that has already skyrocketed to the top of the charts. And you can go and enjoy it and learn a lot about one of the most incredible Jewish movements in history, not just modern Jewish history, but ever in Jewish history. I thank our friends at Koren Publications. They again have provided an amazing author for this segment entitled Buy the Book. And you should check out Koren Publications at korenpub.com, korenpub.com. This time of year, they always have incredible offerings. They have it all year round, but especially this time of year, it seems they always have an amazing rollout of great books. And fantastic specials as well. Check out the website right now. You're listening to Buy the Book. This is the Nachum Segal Network.